One day we'll all be in a room together and it will be one in day. Sync.
That would be a lot of fun. And I, oh man,
right?
I feel like the three of us in a room together could get really dangerous. And I know there's going to be a lot of malort. There's going to be some dice. There's going to be some, what are the odds?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to all of a sudden at 2 a.m. when we're all drunk off our ass, hey, I have a Ouija board.
two in the morning. I'm thinking like 7 a.m. rolls around. We all wake up from our blackouts and we just have an 8 hour long episode.
It's like the equivalent of falling asleep on your keyboard and just having like one letter just like streamed.
Yeah. But if no one could tell, we are doing a very relaxed episode for the week of, I guess, Thanksgiving's coming up.
Yeah, it's the week of Thanksgiving. By the way, welcome to Beyond the Screams.
Oh, yes, that's our name.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy taking land away from other people.
Well, not only to our United States friends. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Happy third Monday of November.
Yeah.
To our French listeners, hey, how's it going?
Hope you have a great day.
If y'all don't know us by now, I'm Steph, and I'm joined by my lovely co-hosts, Holly and Patrick.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
We are continuing our November topic, celebrating Native American and Indigenous folk content creators, and we want to wrap about some more content in a brief fashion.
We're just going to highlight some other Indigenous creators, some films, some short films, some literature, you know, just maybe take a break from football, sit back after you had a nice big dinner and either read a book or watch an interesting short.
Yeah. Or if you're wherever you're at, enjoy these recommendations.
Yeah.
You know, you're in Spain during your siesta, just put one of these movies on, take a little nap before you have to go back to work.
So Holly, what do you have for us?
All right. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about, my friend thought that I would enjoy this movie. It's called Brotherhood of the Wolf. It's a 2001 French movie. It's directed by Christophe Gans of Silent Hill, which I'm a big fan of. I love that movie. I watched this on DVD. Unfortunately, it currently is not streaming anywhere. I watched this with a friend of mine. He thought that I would enjoy the story, and I really did. Like, this is not Native American, like, focused, but there is a character in this movie that got amazing representation that I was like, oh, okay, like, this is how you can make a movie with, like, the quote sidekick character of the Native American and actually give some history and not just have them be, you know, a cliche. So Mark Discascos, he plays the character of Manny, who is an Iroquois native of the Mohawk tribe. The actor is of Japanese, Filipino, Spanish, Irish, and Chinese heritage. He's trained in martial arts, and in this movie, he is kind of like the right-hand man to the main character. He is a trained martial artist, and the scenes with him in his fight scenes, holy cow, these are so well choreographed and so well filmed. Like, they had these amazing moments of, like, slow motion thrown in there, and, like, where you can really see, like, how his body is, like, able to move. And I'm like, oh my God, like, he is amazing.
So I haven't watched this movie yet. I added it to my list to watch, but I did go watch the trailer. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying, there's a lot of martial arts that I was noticing.
Yeah.
The main thing I noticed, though, was the amount of fast-paced camera zooms in this movie trailer. I have not seen in years.
It's very early
2000s.
You know, this came out in, it came out in 2001. And as I was watching it, I was like, this seems like a 90s movie. Like, it could have been filmed in the 90s. Like, it's not...
It probably was filmed in the 90s and didn't get released until
like, it wasn't badly filmed. It was just a particular style. So, this...
Oh, Christoph Gans? He loves it. I mean...
So, this movie...
This reminded me of early Peter Jackson stuff.
This movie takes place in 1700s France, and it has historical fiction embedded into it. And because I am not great at history, you know, I had to do some research into it, but it's, you know, Revolutionary War and when Native Americans were also being, like, driven out of their native lands and everything. And one of the great things that I loved in this movie is, like I said, the way that they handled the character Manny, because they have these French nobles talking to him and saying, like, oh, you're like cannibalistic savages, and like, can you, like, mocking him and like, can you even breed with our women and all of that. And
what the fuck?
And yeah, but then they have these amazing moments where, unfortunately, there is some kind of, you know, there's a sense of, like, you know, white knighting and, like, white savior because, you know, it's a French movie. But they do give a pretty good history of, like, they talk about totems and how, you know, what an animal spirit is and what a totem is. And they talked about, very briefly, but they did talk about the idea of raging war on Native Americans was to sell them infected sheets, like infected with smallpox from hospitals in Quebec. And, you know, when they got ill and they, you know, like the majority of them died or were too sick, they would kill the rest of them. And their whole goal was to, like, wipe out the Native Americans. And they don't shy away from it. And I had mentioned before that when we were discussing Blood Quantum, like, it's very nice to see these characters who are not just sidekicks. And I feel like Manny is a good, in this movie, he does play the part of a sidekick, you know, and there is some, like, okay, like, I'm going to come and, like, give your name honor from the white person, you know, but they really do give a good, like, glimpse of the history into this. And that's what I really loved about this. Like, just the respect that they give to Native Americans in this, even though they're not a focal point. I thought it was really great to see this. And aside from that, there's so many good things in this. The tension that they build up with the beast that's in this movie, they give little hints to it, but they don't, like, overtly describe it, or they don't, like, give too much away in the beginning. Like, they really give a good sense of, like, let's give you little bits and pieces so your imagination can kind of start to put these pieces together of what this creature is. And the costumes, the colors of the palette of the movie, and the setting was beautiful, and music is great.
Was there a lot of CGI in the movie?
There was. That's one of my cons. There was CGI with the creature. There were a couple instances where they had close-ups where the practical effects were beautiful. And I was like, oh my God, like, I want to, if this were not a 2001 movie, if this were, I couldn't tell you if it came prior or past, like, now, when they would be able to have, like, more, use a marriage of practical and CGI. I don't know what would be better, but unfortunately, at this time period, the CGI kind of overtook the little bit of practical effects that they had. You know, it doesn't, like, make the movie worse. It's just, I guess, a sign of the time that it was made. But I loved this movie more than I thought I would. Since it is French, I watched it both dubbed in French with subtitles, spoken in French with subtitles and dubbed in English. And while the dubbed version in English, it's, you know, it's fine. It matches up pretty well with, like, the way they're speaking. It's my personal preference. I like the subtitles. I like to hear the actors, you know, like in the moment, like their inflections and everything. And I would just prefer to read the subtitles. But either way, it doesn't, you know, it's, I think it's a personal preference.
Cool. Hopefully it'll be available to stream so we can all watch it.
Yeah.
If not, go to your local movie store and library. Buy it. I'm sure you can find it for
go check out your library. I know libraries are doing like curbside
books, something like that.
Pickups and stuff, so go check it out. It's really good.
But definitely support the local one.
Yes, you know, local.
Don't be going to Borders or something like that. I love Borders. Don't
Borders
get me wrong,
doesn't even exist anymore.
It doesn't.
Oh, no, Barnes & Nobles. But if you find a Borders, go, because they're hurting. They're hurting.
Like Blockbuster, there's just one.
Yeah.
I feel like if you find a Borders, you're in purgatory and you're dead. Because they don't exist.
Anytime they try to leave it, they just can't. The sensor goes off that they're stealing. You know, Holly chose some feature-length films, so I thought I'd do some short films. Some, you know, under 3 minutes, some good watches, still featuring Indigenous, Native American, First Nation. So the first one I want to talk about is one called Bloodland. It's from 2011. Written and directed by Ella Mija Telfeathers, also Joss in Blood Quantum.
Yay, Joss.
Yeah, it is pretty much political movie about the oil industry fucking up the earth. So Bloodland is a statement on the irreversible and detrimental impact of the gas and oil extraction on our planet, and in particularly on the impact the hydraulic fracturing has and will have on the Kanawha or Bloodland. The film was shot with a completely Indigenous cast and crew. The film was also inadvertently funded by the Blood Tribe Chief and Council, the Gas and Oil Companies, and the KRI Resources, Inc., because funds from the distribution checks from the Blood Tribe Chief and Council were used to fund the making of this film.
Wait.
So,
wait, what? Funds from a distribution check.
So the tribe gets a distribution check from the oil and gas companies, and they use that check to fund this film.
Oh.
I know. Okay. So they inadvertently funded this film that is obviously a statement against them. It's the shortest 3 minutes long. It's full of blood and gore. And more importantly, it has a very extremely important message. I say take a break from football and watch this. Maybe go in the bathroom, put it on your phone, or go to your bedroom. Do what you can. It's 3 minutes. Just go watch it. I thought it was really well done for a 2011 short film.
Very cool. Very cool.
Awesome.
We'll definitely include a link on our website. If you go to the episode link on our website, we'll have links to all these amazing videos.
Yep.
Oh, man. If only I were going to be around family this Thanksgiving, instead of like watching like Peanuts Thanksgiving, Garfield Thanksgiving, I'd be like, I got something to show you. Here comes Aunt Holly with the truth.
Yeah. Hey, we're watching Peanuts. No, we're watching Bloodland now.
Right. Hi, family. I was going to prepare a nice statement, you know, before we eat. And I would like to direct everybody to the TV here for 3 minutes. So just something you guys should think about as you're eating that cranberry sauce.
Everybody have a shot of Malort and let's discuss.
This is a great movie to show before you eat because people get drilled in this movie with a drill. There's a lot of blood and gore.
Amazing.
I watched it a few times. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I'm a huge fan of the Jeff Barnaby multiverse. I watched Rhymes for Young Ghouls, which I wouldn't classify as a horror movie, but we had mentioned this on our Blood Quantum podcast, and it highlights the terror of residential schools. You can watch this on Amazon Prime. You can rent it, or you can watch with a Fandor subscription. I liked it. It definitely has a very similar vibe to Blood Quantum. It's not nearly as gory. It's more of a drama thriller, not really much of a horror movie. It stars Devereaux Jacobs, who made a little cameo in Blood Quantum, but we also have some familiar faces as well, including the Townie Sheriff from Blood Quantum and Chainsaw Daddy Bumper. Woo! He has more Bumper. Lines in this, and I was like, you're actually a decent actor. Okay. Like, the acting is better in this one than in Blood Quantum. Sorry.
Oh, dang.
It's kind of like a, I don't want to say it's quiet, but it's definitely kind of like a chill movie. It's worthwhile to watch if you don't want something too gory, but maybe you kind of want to support indigenous folk while you slam some turkey or post turkey. Check it out.
Once the family starts debating politics, just go ahead and put this movie on and sit
back. Make it really awkward.
Yeah. I chose another short little film that came out in 2019 called The Witch Tree, which is an old Native American folklore produced by a guy named Brian M. Hall and the Narrative Art Program. That's about all the information I can found on it. But it is done it like in a very unique CGI visual setting that is overlaid with just a narrative telling the story. It was really well done. I'll give you kind of a brief idea of what the folklore is about. The husband and wife seek shelter under like an old willow tree or just an old tree. And the wife sees some strange things hanging from the branches. She tries to tell the husband, the husband's like, "Yeah, don't worry about it. Just stay asleep. We'll deal with it in the morning." But through the night, she hears this gnawing sound. And in the darkness, she tries to wake her husband. He doesn't wake up. So she just sits there awake for the rest of the night, hearing the gnawing sound until morning, where she goes to try to wake her husband and finds him dead. I don't want to tell you what else happens. That's kind of the premise of the story. It's not very long. It's about 3 minutes. I highly recommend it. It was a very cool little short to see. So check it out. The Witch Tree. It's on YouTube. We'll provide a link.
Sounds spooky. I can't wait to check that out. Sounds really good.
I'm excited to check that out.
The animation is really well done.
I have a quick short that I'd like to mention. It's called The Candy Meister. It was made for Vancouver's Fright Film Fest, which is one of those 72-hour short movie challenges. It's really cute. You can kind of tell it was made quickly. And it's about a group of young gals who participate in a radio contest where they have to spend the night in an abandoned residential school. So I was just down a residential school hall.
Can you spell Stephanie, for our listeners?
The Candy Meister?
Yeah. Meister.
Meister, M-E-I-S-T-E-R. It was cute. You could tell that it was homemade.
Yeah, definitely. I watched it this morning.
It's totally cute. I mean, you could definitely put this one on with your, younger sibs or cousins, and maybe they have a chuckle if they can handle a couple spooks.
But they did it in 72 hours, which is impressive.
Yeah, and again, I was impressed with the acting. I was expecting really bad acting, but the characters were really cute, and I liked all of them.
There was a lot of bad acting, in my opinion. But 72-hour film festival with your friends and cousins and family, so I look past it.
The second thing that I had found, I was actually looking for a Native American short, but I found another feature film. It's called The Smudging. It's from 2016. It's an independent film written and directed by Mike J. Marin, who also plays the character Bad in the film. Mike Marin was born and raised in Oakland, California, and received his bachelor's in film and video from Columbia College in Chicago. I found this streaming on Amazon Prime, so you can watch that for free if you have it. The overall budget for this film was $3,500, and half of that was donated on GoFundMe. The people who are actually involved, they had a $1,750 budget, and then they raised the rest of it.
That's awesome.
After watching this and seeing the number budget they had, I am so impressed with what I just saw. This was filmed and inspired by events that take place in the American Indian Center of Chicago. It's an old building. I will get into that. But also at the building has since, or the center has since moved from uptown Chicago into Albany Park. So this was filmed in the old American Indian Center building. And while they were filming there, some of the center's community and the people who worked in the kitchen, they would feed the cast and crew. And I love that sense of community because I have been there a few times, like for gatherings or if they had like a craft sale or something. Like I have been there and I have eaten from their kitchens and their fry bread and their Native American tacos are so delicious. They're so good. So yes, if you're in Chicago and if you've ever been there, like you know how good that food is. This film was also nominated for Best Feature in LA's RIP Horror Fest in 2016. It was the official feature film at the 2017 Indigenous Comic-Con 2 in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and chosen as the closing film of the First Nations Film and Video Festival in 2018 in Chicago. First thing I want to say, it takes place in Chicago.
Does it really?
So, I mean, I love seeing movies that take place in Chicago, but you always see like the downtown area. And in this, you get like people walking through the alleys and it's like, yes, that's where I hang out with my friends. Like that's where I hang out.
Playing craps, fucking dice in the corner in the back alley.
Yeah. Yeah.
Throwing dollars down.
You know, like, you know, in between scenes during Rocky Horror, like I'll go out into the alley and chit chat with some people if I know I have a long scene. Like this is my home and I just love seeing it in that capacity and not seeing like downtown crazy Chicago city, like where it's all busy and, you know, it's not what everyday Chicago is. I was not expecting this movie to be like really as scary as it was, but there were some moments in this where I was like, oh my God, like I was really creeped out. I was very impressed with the atmosphere that they put into this because they were filming on like weekend in the American, the AIC, the American Indian Center. They were filming like on weekends, basically. So they had like 6 weekends in which they could film this. There is, you know, a lack of cinematic music because this is very low budget. So you don't get the traditional, like, ooh, something spooky is going to happen. Or we have like a big jump scare and here's like the big stinger. Like you don't get that. And I could see my, as I was watching it, I saw myself in my head saying, this is where this musical cue would come in. It was really interesting to watch it without that because I was like, yes, I see, I'm very clearly able to see like the moments that horror movies set up and like the tension that they build and what it's like to do that without music. And it was really cool. And also this building has a pretty damn cool history. Like as I was doing my research into it, so it was the building, the old building that it was in, it was built in 1926. It was built as a Masonic temple. The American Indian Center began using it in 1966. And in 2018, the American Indian Center moved buildings. They went from uptown to Albany Park, so they're in a different location now. But they have since renovated that space into like big loft apartments. They're pretty damn expensive.
Of course they are.
I mean, it's uptown. Of course they are. But doing my reading into this movie, apparently this building is pretty well known for like being haunted. And so I tried to do some research into it because part of what they talk about in the movie is, you know, these personal experiences that these workers and volunteers and, you know, people who came to the programs, they've experienced. And I tried to do my research into it. All I can find is now like apartment listings. And I found one article that was like a history of Freemasons in Chicago. And the one address they gave for this particular building was the wrong address, and it was for a Buddhist temple. And I was like, oh no, oh no, Holly, you're starting to go down the path of like in Candyman or Sinister and like finding all these things and they go deeper and deeper and deeper. I was like, oh no, I have to stop.
Be my victim.
But yeah, it's really cool. And also, this is pretty creepy.
I'm waiting for you to like bring up blueprints and like advertisements, yeah. And you're like, it's the same building.
I was getting.
She's Nick Cage from National Treasure.
Oh my God, Stephanie, I had two tabs up on my computer, and it was like, here's the old building, here's the renovated building. And I was like, no, I'm getting too close. But one of the creepiest things about this, there is a YouTube video of when they were filming the movie, and we will link the video in our show notes. There is like a shadow entity that you see in the doorway, and they even say on there like the way that like the only two actors in the scene, they have flashlights, and there's no way they can cast a shadow in that direction. And then they were filming the same scene again on a different day, and they got like a same shadow entity in a spot that like moves away. It's very creepy. I watched it several times, like with the lights off. It's kind of hard to see it, but I mean, it was creepy. And now knowing the history of that building, and also knowing that I can't find history before that, and like, oh my God, I'm going to stop now. But
if only there was some way you could talk to somebody involved with the film to maybe get some more insights.
You know what? I was a great person, and I reached out to the director, Mike Maron, and I did a little interview with him. The only cons that I had with this, there were some tonal shifts with the footage that they were doing. I couldn't really tell if how they were filming it, if it was supposed to be like found footage versus like current footage. They did some like black and white things to differentiate like what was being filmed versus like what was going on in real time. And I think that kind of lent to a tonal shift. So it was kind of confusing a little bit until you got to a certain point. Also, this is not a strike against it, but I know that, you know, some people won't be able to get past it. The acting was pretty amateur, which, you know, I'm going to guess that they used, you know, Chicago-based, like, you know, up-and-coming actors who don't, you know, there aren't professional, you know,
right, like, hey,
actors.
Yeah, like, hey, you're my friend. Do you want to be in this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that was the
I can't
whole
pay
movie
you.
A favor.
You can tell this is an amateur movie, but it was so well done. I was very impressed. Like, even the sound quality. Like, there were parts where they had, there were parts where they had, like, interrogations with people or interviews, and because they were in the spot that they were of the American Indian Center, maybe it's because I know the place and, you know, it's not well furnished. There is it's echoey. So it's the location versus other movies where, you know, like we rented out a space so we can use it to film our movie and we're not going to put any decor in it whatsoever. I don't know. Maybe it's because I know the space, but I feel like the limitations they had, the place that they were filming, it mixed very well together. It seemed very amateur, but because knowing that it was, you know, very local, it was local people using what resources they had, trying to tell stories from their past, like bringing all of their, like, you know, things that their grandparents would tell them, you know, stories from, you know, their just their culture and everything, just bringing that in. It kind of added to the atmosphere, I think. I think they did a really great job. It was really creepy. It had me on edge, and it was a good cohesive story, and that's the most important part. Like, yep. You can put all the other things, you know, you can forgive, you know, a low budget, you can forgive, you know, rudimentary acting because, you know, people need to start somewhere. It's a good story, and it was well put together, and I think it's really worth checking out.
Yeah, I look forward to watching it. I watched the trailer this morning, and I think I'm going to either try to watch that or Rhymes for Young Ghouls this weekend. It's my goal.
Or watch both of them.
Both, yeah.
I'm a busy man.
I'm going to watch Rhymes for Young Ghouls, so you got to catch up.
Yeah. There's only one last thing I do want to mention, just kind of an honorable mention. I started an audiobook called The Only Good Indians. It's by Stephen Graham Jones. He's a Native American horror writer here in the United States. So I just want to give it a shout out. The Only Good Indians follows four Native American men after a disturbing event from their youth puts them in a desperate struggle for their lives. Tracked by an entity bent on revenge, these childhood friends are helpless as their culture and traditions they left behind to catch up them in a violent, vengeful way. So I started this audiobook, you know, earlier this week and about halfway through. So far, it's pretty good. I think Stephen Graham Jones paints a pretty good picture of life on a reservation and like some racism and relationship issues. So it's more of a dramatic story with like some supernatural tendencies and some horror cliches. So far, it's pretty good. I'm looking forward to get a little more into the actual supernatural part of it, but I'd say check it out if you want to sit down and read a good book or listen to an audio version of it.
I am part of a book club, and one of the members suggested we read this book. I had access to like a preview version, so I was able to kind of read a couple pages, and I found it hard to read. I don't know if it was the character and this is like their how they're thinking and their thoughts, but it was just like going in a million directions. Like, it was very poorly edited. So I kind of stopped, but I'll give it another go and see.
I was going to say the audio version is performed by Sean Michael Taylor Corbett, who's also another Native American descent from the U.S. And he does a pretty good job reading it. And I could tell when you said like it goes in a million different directions, because there's some parts I had to rewind and re-listen to. So I definitely understand what you're saying on that.
Yeah, but this author has been described as the Jordan Peele of horror when it comes to writing or something or like that.
I have another book of his that I was going to start listening to. It was between The Only Good Indians and Mongols, which is a werewolf coming of age story that he has. I listened to a sample of the audiobook, and it's a book I will definitely read. The guy that reads the book reminded me of Kenneth from 30 Rock, and I was like, I'm not going to listen to this.
I've been doing audiobooks, like when I take my dog for walks, and it's really helped me to get back into reading. And sometimes the person reading, you're like, I cannot stand your voice.
Yeah. The narrator really makes a difference.
Yeah. Luckily, The Only Good Indians, Sean Corbett does a very good job.
Nice.
I think his voice is, and the way he acts it out and stuff.
I get into audiobook reading?
ASMR audiobook reading. If you're looking for extra content for some, like, you know, ASMR stuff, join our Patreon. Maybe we'll add some ASMR readings from Holly. Who knows?
I will say that we did move forward with reading Pushing the Bear, which is super good. Highly recommend. It's not necessarily spooky, but it's a fictional tale about a variety of perspectives of Native Americans during the Trail of Tears. So it's filled with plenty of horrible terror, awful things that'll leave you wide awake at night thinking, what the fuck is wrong with this country and people?
It's not called the Trail of Tears for nothing.
I think all this stuff that we recommend, it, you know, will help you if you're not into football or anything like that. You just kind of want to get away after family gathering. Check some of this stuff out. I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, and it's all about awareness, and we want to help promote what's out there other than the big box movies and like the top 50 things that everybody is aware of.
Yeah, and check our the resources. So to our links that we have to multiple other stories and shorts and movies and stuff. We have a lot of stuff to share with you.
And that's all on our website at beyondthescreams.com.
And if you have any recommendations, let us know. Shoot us a comment, shoot us a DM, shoot us an email.
Drop your website if we can promote you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you have a wonderful November. Give some love to our Native Americans and Indigenous folk this holiday. We would love for y'all to subscribe. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Check out our website, beyondthescreams.com.
And we always have some good discussions going on at Facebook, on our Facebook group page, Beyond the Screams Podcast.
And for extra content, you know, check out our Patreon. Also, fuck the Nova Scotia lobster industry.